The Nordics are a cosy, convivial bunch. Since they finally stopped waging war and occupying each other a couple of centuries ago, the relationship between Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, and Iceland has, for the most part, been characterized by partnership and collaboration. Nowhere is this more visible internationally than in culture and the arts. Cultural exports have been a significant part of the Nordic region's soft power, particularly over the past decade or so. We've teamed up with the Nordic Council of Ministers for 5 special editions of the Foreign Desk Explainer, delving deeper into topics of global importance from the region: green transport, biodiversity and protecting nature, education, political cooperation, and the subject of this episode, cultural collaboration. How is the Nordic art world branding itself on the global scene? What's the secret behind all those great Nordic TV series? And how does collaboration work on stage? I'm Michael Booth, and this is the Foreign Desk Explainer.
I actually don't think it takes that much in order to resonate across the world.
The Nordic region has been hit hard by Netflix and by all other big streaming platforms coming to Europe. I think they started like from the north.
On the Atlantic crossing, I spoke everything mixed up, Swedish, Norwegian and English. And at the end, I didn't think of which language I used.
That was Swedish actress Sophie Helin, probably best known for playing Saga Norren in the Danish-Swedish crime drama The Bridge. More from her later in the programme. We all have some idea of what Nordic culture is. Films with sophisticated storytelling and a focus on social issues like Another Round, the double Oscar-winning Danish film, or gritty crime thrillers like The Bridge, or the groundbreaking installations of Danish-Norwegian artist duo Elm Green and Dragset. But how do these relatively small countries manage to create cultural products which seem so effortlessly to find a global audience? The answer is through collaboration. My name is Michael Booth. I'm Monocle's man in Denmark and the author of a book about the Nordic region, The Almost Nearly Perfect People. For this special edition of the Foreign Desk Explainer, in association with the Nordic Council of Ministers, we've been talking to leading figures in Nordic cultural collaborations from the worlds of theatre, TV and film to find out why they're just so damn good at it and what we can expect from them in the future. But first, we're going to look at the contemporary art world and an art fair which is aiming to gather the scene in the Nordic region to present it to the world.
I'm Nanna Jordenberg. I'm the director of CHART. CHART has become the leading event for contemporary art in the Nordic region. We were started 8 years ago by 5 galleries, Danish galleries, who wanted to bring together the art scene. We are a small region in the world and the art market is very international. And there was this a need for a home base to create a home market, but also bring together a vast variety of individual galleries, institutions, arts professionals, who by standing together and collaborating could create something that was bigger than what each of them could do on their own. By doing so, we have also created international entry point to the Nordic scene. It also has developed new collaborations and a stronger local scene, because you see it in a context all of a sudden. It's not just one Danish gallery at Art Basel or something. It has become a community.
Over the years, have some kind of common threads emerged that can define for you what Nordic art is?
So I think the sort of the Nordic common trait is in the way we do things. So the ability to collaborate, to engage in dialogues and new collaborations, I think that is quite unique.
What attracts international buyers to CHART and to the region? The Nordics don't have so many of the kind of superstars of the art world.
Well, I think maybe that is the attraction, that you see things you don't see necessarily at other fairs, but it's not the sort of the game of the superstars only. And I think the attraction for internationals is the profile that we are a fair which only show Nordic galleries. So you get that curation that I think a lot of the international fairs, in a sense, lack.
This last summer 2020, of course, CHART was very different from previous years, but you pulled it off with a kind of remote satellite events in the 5 capitals.
We learned a lot which can be used going forward. and which we will also take with us in the 21 edition that we are planning now, which will be a combination where we will both be physically present in Copenhagen at the end of August, but we will also expand our reach. So already in June, we will launch a pre-program, which will be mainly online and digital, where we will connect galleries with international curators. We will publish written pieces on the artists, do live talks on our Instagram and things like that. So we connect with the international world already in June. And then we gather the sort of the local tribe and, of course, as many internationals as possible in August.
Over the years, have you discovered any surprising challenges in coordinating between the five different Nordic artist groups?
I think we have come to the realization that in the Nordic region, we tend to see ourselves as similar. But once you dive into it a little bit, you understand that we actually have quite different ways of going about things and doing things. You know, it's like the family feast of the cousins meeting annually, and we challenge each other and we tease each other. And I think that inspiration is critical for a small region. If we still want an international perspective on the Nordic art scene, I think that's crucial, that that whole perspective of collaborating Nordic and also understanding that we can promote ourselves on the international scenes, not only by going away, but staying and attracting people to the region. I think that holds a big potential for the future of the region if that is somehow lifted. It's about collaborating with our Nordic neighbors in order to make that stronger. So a more active Nordic cultural policy that I think has to come from the scene itself. I actually don't think it takes that much in order to resonate across the world, because in the region we have a lot of quality, and the way internationals look at the region is also with fairly high respect and also interest in terms of what goes on and the combination of the art scene and the livability across the Nordic countries attracts a lot of internationals. So I think there is a huge potential. Now all the local governments and the local debate is about how we sustain the cultural sector and the art scene. And I think an answer to that could be much stronger Nordic collaboration and also initiatives that come out of what's needed in the scene. What's needed in my case on the art scene is probably a little bit different from what's needed in theater or what's needed in films. But I think focusing on the sectors and making the sector stronger from a Nordic perspective is interesting to look at and would make a huge difference in the future.
That was Nanna Jørtenberg, director of the Chart Art Fair, who I spoke to in Copenhagen. She made the point that Nordic cultural collaboration didn't need to cost a lot of money, and Chart has a strong commercial aspect, of course. At the end of the day, they're trying to sell Nordic art to the world. That model may be a way forward. Though its cultural budget is still one of the largest spending categories, the Nordic Council of Ministers has recently shifted its emphasis more towards climate and sustainability sectors, which has created a certain nervousness in the cultural sector. One area that continues to flourish, with global sales, are Nordic television co-productions. Henrik Hartmann is Secretary General of Nordvision, a partnership between the Nordic region's five national television broadcasters, SVT in Sweden, NRK in Norway, Denmark's Radio, Finland's YLE and RUV in Iceland. Nordvision started back in the 1950s to arrange collaborations between the countries, mostly on outside broadcasts. Last year, it was involved in 77 Nordic co-produced TV series, mostly drama and documentaries. It's a facilitator helping exchange and collaboration between the five broadcasters, rather than a funding body like the Nordisk Film and TV Fund, which we'll hear about in a minute. First of all, I asked Henrik Hartmann how the Nordic national broadcasters were facing up to the challenges of the American streaming services.
The Nordic region has been hit hard by Netflix and by all other big streaming platforms coming to Europe. I think they started like from the north, from Norway, Denmark, Sweden, and down through Europe. So we've been trying to cope with this for quite many years. I think we've turned it a little bit around, saying that, well, we don't only have our streaming platform, but we do also have Flow TV, we have Flow Radio, we have podcasts, and we can do events in our territory. So we have the whole range of different opportunities, and we need to be even better in collaborating, even within our own companies, in our own territories, to stick out.
The response is more about going more local than trying to take on Netflix with universal kind of international stories.
That's a very good question, because this is, of course, one of the consequences of why should we have American content, even English content, on our platforms when people can reach it through YouTube or through Netflix or HBO. We've always had the obligation to do local content, but we are doing even more Nordic content now. We have a long tradition for doing that, but we have increased our collaboration hugely on adult drama, on youth drama, and on children's drama, and also on documentaries, because we feel that this is the market position which we want to take on one hand, but also which we've been forced to take because the big streaming giant, they can something else, but we know the local market, and we are, of course, producing local content. Together, we have some strength. We try to play each other better, you know, like on a football team, that you would be better if you play with better partners. So we've had for like the last 20 years, we've had a strong collaboration and strong relationship connections between heads of drama. And DR has been rewarded having like 5 or 6 Emmys within 15 years. And now
that's DR, the Danish national broadcaster.
And then NRK and SVT, they also want to stand up for this. And even the Icelandics are now producing some very interesting drama.
So what is that Nordic angle or flavor? What makes it a Nordic production?
It's a lot of things. I would say it's sometimes a more critical angle to the subjects that you are discussing. We have to make sure that there's a gender equality also. If we want to compete with Disney Plus, which comes with a lot of content and a lot of muscles, our response to that would be to collaborate even more. Now we will do at least 14 drama series every year, children's drama series, and we will either dub it or we will subtitle it. And we have a long tradition for telling Nordic stories like Pippi Longstrump and the Mummy Trolls and whatever. We want to continue that. And doing it also with real children, and not only doing it with animation, but doing it with children, so Danish children can see themselves or neighboring children, neighboring countries' children. So this is how like 5 small partners come together and can co-produce many more series that you could do yourself. Maybe DR could produce 4 series. Now together we can do 14 every year. So every month there will be a new children's drama series on our players.
I mean, all the national broadcasts in the world are chasing younger eyes. Mm. But you have, from the region, had some enormous successes in young adult programs. Most famously, the Norwegian series Skam.
That's true. This is actually a crazy successful story, because I think many of the Nordic broadcasters had actually given up on youth and young adult. But Skam was such a huge success all over the Nordic countries and showed us that we could actually attract young audience to our platforms if we do something which is really well done.
I'm wondering, is there a sense in which the 5 national broadcasters feel a responsibility to maintain this kind of Nordic cohesion?
I don't think there's a special interest for the Nordic content in Denmark or Sweden and all. I think the story has to be told very well. I'm not nostalgic or romantic in that sense, and I don't think that people go for Swedish content. They go for good storytelling, and so we have to be very good in storytelling. And
could you ever imagine making, say, a drama, but in English?
No, I don't think so. We actually, right now, we have a very good example in The Atlantic Crossing, which is a huge Nordic co-production.
What is it you want, Your Highness?
Welcome to America!
I want my life back.
And the language here would, of course, be English, when English is the spoken language in the room, but it would be the king, the grandfather of the Norwegian Crown Prince, is Danish. And she's Swedish, and her husband and the husband's father, the king of Norway, is Norwegian. So, I mean, we will mix all those same languages up together. And that would be more authentic, I think, also. The interesting thing about that theme is, of course, that all three Scandinavian countries, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, can see themselves into this co-production. And sometimes when we do that, we have to make sure that this would not be like a Scandic pudding or whatever. I mean, if it's too artificial, people will very quickly say, well, we don't think this is like an authentic story, so we won't watch it. So we have to take care not to mix things too much up.
We'll be hearing more about the new series Henrik Hartmann mentioned there, Atlantic Crossing, from its star Sophia Helin in a moment. It's definitely not a Scandic pudding, I'm pleased to say. But now we travel to Stockholm to hear from Finnish actress Maria Sid, currently the artistic director of Kulturhuset Stadsteatern, the Stockholm City Theatre. Our Stockholm correspondent, Liv Lewicznik, went along to find out whether the spirit of collaboration in the Nordic countries is alive and well on the region's stages.
I've been working in Sweden for like 20 years, but in the film and TV industry. So I started as an actor and then I also became a director. There is some kind of straightforwardness in the Finnish or the Finnish-Swedish way that I think is quite suitable in Sweden. I always say that if you put a Swede and a Finn together, then you really can get both action and small talk. So I've been learning from Sweden a lot of small talk, and I really like the soft values and this kind of warmness that I think that this country has. And then when I put my Finnish kind of not talking so much straightness into that, I think something interesting comes out of it. I've been working in the northern countries my whole life. So for me, it's always about new voices, new angles. And I actually love it when we have Norwegian directors directing in Sweden or Swedish directors directing in Finland. I think it was very interesting when I was young. You were on the road much more, because we had all these plays coming from Sweden to Finland, these theater companies. They brought with them 2-3 plays, and then we had this exchange. And that has changed because, of course, money. And I really see that there was something very good with that time, that we could do all these things. We could invite whole groups to come and do things. And I really hope that we will be there soon again. Of course, this pandemic situation isn't doing this very good for these kind of thoughts. But I am trying really much to get also international artists to come to Stockholm, to Sergels Torg. We are in the middle of the city and it's important that we are an international place. So I want to have more of that. We have directors and contacts with directors, and we are actually this spring we were going to go to some other countries to do something together with another theater, but now it's impossible. So I will get back to this.
That was our Stockholm correspondent, Liv Lewicznik, talking to Maria Sid of the Stockholm City Theater. Now to big screen collaborations. Liselotte Forsman is the CEO of the Nordic Film and TV Fund, which is celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. Basically, if you've got a favourite Nordic film or drama series or documentary, the chances are at least some of its budget came from this fund, originally started by the 5 Nordic film institutes and now supported by 11 media companies, including some streaming services and the Nordic Council of Ministers. Each year, the fund distributes around 10 to 12 million euros to around 60 productions in the region. But I wanted to get down to the nitty-gritty. How was this money distributed?
Actually, we have a rule saying that minimum 50% of the fiction money should go to feature films. But, of course, we have a growing number of TV series. So we are still able to keep up, like, delivering 50% of the financing go to feature film titles and the rest to series titles. But it is, of course, difficult when a series is so much more expensive to keep also the sums exactly equal. Because you need to have, of course, at least 2 Nordic countries aboard before you even can apply. And that means that one inner meaning also is to promote the Nordic talent to work together and the Nordic companies to work together. And the important thing when we promote this collaboration and the co-production is that we, of course, never want any Nordic soap, like you remember the horrible Eurosoap that was made some years ago, when money we're dictating stories. This is never the case in our co-productions.
How do you decide which productions to support?
When we make our decisions on who will get funding, we look at two things. And one is quality and the other is the Nordic distribution. And when we look at quality, it is really easy to spot if the story is ruled by the money. One important thing is also originality, because we know the market is so hot today. There is so much volume out there. There is so much to sell and buy. So to stick out, I'm really happy that you have to have good quality and you have to be unique and you have to have authenticity in your genre. Is it sci-fi or whatever? But you have to be true to the story you are telling. We are five countries that are very different. We share history, we have shared kings, we have shared wars. But since the Second World War, what we do share and what is so important for us is that we share a really, really great respect for democracy and for welfare societies and modern societies. And this is what unites us. And part of doing films and TV series and documentaries in our country is always that there has to be the deeper story. That there is an individual exciting story and the plot, etc. But it has to say something about us as human beings, about our society, maybe about where the world is going. Because both documentaries and fictions, they can predict things that the papers and the news stories can't know before tomorrow.
What are the greatest challenges facing the kinds of co-productions in the future? Has the landscape changing now?
The recent changes, of course, is that now we have streaming services. And if we look at the applications we get now, I can see that the changes are, for example, that in earlier years, when two countries were aboard, they could have quite a strong application already. And with three countries, you could feel like safe from the distribution side to get support. But now we have many applications already with like five countries aboard. And that means that we have to look at, but what sort of a distribution? Because you can have distribution on paper, but how much is the company doing for really getting people attached to the projects, you know, in different countries and so on? What is the marketing plan and what is done? Plus then, of course, the quality, which also is, there is so many high quality projects now. In the Nordics, we were very early to collaborate on a political level, with the ministers collaborating, and then the culture field collaborating, and the audiovisual industry collaborating. And then when the rest of the world realized that you can strengthen your drama so much by opening your borders and by producing truly unique stories, which is suited for your own country and springs from your own country, but says something on a universal level. So this is something that we knew when the market started to get hot. So when other countries started to look for co-productions that were not historical dramas, because that was like what it used to be in Europe. But when the modern, today's stories also, and the whole market was activated, we already knew how to collaborate. And I think this is one of the keys. Also that very early on, for example, in Denmark, in the TV series sector, so much focus was put on the writing. And you know, as they say, if it ain't in the script, it ain't in the story. So this is especially true for TV series. Of course, we also have good public funding, which allows for diversity and experimentation.
As the star of The Bridge, the Danish-Swedish crime series, which was a massive international hit a few years ago, Swedish actress Sofia Helin, she's kind of the queen of Nordic screen collaborations. Her new series, Atlantic Crossing, also has a pan-regional theme. It's set during the Nazi occupation of Norway.
As you all know, fire spread, and Europe is on fire, Franklin. Help my country.
Helin plays the Swedish-born Norwegian crown princess Marta, who's married to the Norwegian crown prince with a Danish father-in-law, who was the Norwegian king at the time. Are you keeping up? When I spoke to Helin down the line from her home in Stockholm, I first of all asked about the challenges of these kinds of Nordic collaborations.
Since we are very small countries and we have a language that is not, we don't have the same language, but we understand each other. And that makes it very easy to work together. And of course, we are more unlike than what it seems like from the outside, maybe.
Presumably there are some quite specific challenges that come with working with other Nordic countries. What language did you speak on set during Atlantic Crossing, for instance?
On the Atlantic Crossing, I spoke everything mixed up, Swedish, Norwegian and English. And at the end, I didn't think of which language I used. One challenge for me as a Swede to work with this production is the relationship to patriotism. In Sweden, traditionally, we are not big nationalists. But in Norway, the case is a bit different because they had to fight for their freedom. And to me, as a Swede, that's a bit complicated because that's not the way we see Sweden. I got to understand that the Norwegian pride of their country is from an underdog perspective, from being very attacked and bullied by their neighbors. And I mean, at this case, even occupied by the Nazis. So I gained an understanding for that patriotism. There is always this, you know, big brother, little brother complex to deal with, that especially the Norwegians, they have kind of a, yeah, they're always trying to compete with Sweden because they, yeah, it's kind of a little brother, bigger brother relationship.
But I'm guessing there are also great advantages to working with the neighbours too, right?
A great example of the advantages of working together from different countries is when we worked with the bridge, because in Sweden we have a very hard tradition of respecting the director, and in Denmark they have a very strong tradition of respecting the author. And since we had a Danish director and a Swedish author, that worked very well because they were very much respectful and on their toes in front of one another. And that turned out to be a very good solution for a successful cooperation. I think it's because we have to work together because our countries are so small. We need each other in order to finance it all. So that's one part. And the other part is that we have a natural bond when it comes to languages, for instance. And I think it's always when you make a story, it has the reason to make the story can never be we have a budget between two countries who want to work together. I mean, if that remains the main story through the production, that's a Europudding. But if you find a reason to tell this story about, for instance, in the case with the bridge, about this region, and also finds the reason to tell this story about these characters, then that doesn't matter anymore. I think that's where productions fail, when they never find the core of the story. They just try to make it because they have money together. If you have to do something in another country and it has to be in that country, then you have to find a reason within the characters for why they have to go there in order to follow their personal journey or development or struggle.
Are there any differences in acting styles?
I mean, there is a slight difference between Swedish and Danish expression, where I think the Danish expression is more raw in a very interesting way, I think, where the Swedish expression maybe is more intellectual.
That was Swedish actress Sofia Hillin. I should also mark your card that she's one of the stars of an amazing new Norwegian series, Exit. It's kind of like a Wolf of Wall Street, but for grown-ups, set in the Oslo finance world. It's currently in its second season. I have a feeling it's about to become a global hit. That's all for this week's special episode of the Foreign Desk Explainer. Listen out for more of these editions produced by me, Michael Booth, in association with the Nordic Council of Ministers. It was edited by Christy Evans at Monocle 24 in London. Thanks for listening and goodbye.